It took me, the first project I did, Our Town, back in 2017, took about a year for folks to kind of come around and trust me. And because theater's, you're vulnerable if you're going on stage or you're doing something new for the first time. It's very risky.
Hello, and welcome to Sense of Place, a podcast of the Housatonic Heritage Oral History Center at Berkshire Community College. Today, we're listening to Anne Gallo, director of Ubu Theater in Tyringham, Massachusetts. She is telling us about an ambitious project that is, at the same time, very homegrown, taking place in the exquisite Tyringham Valley in western Massachusetts. I'm Judith Monachina, director of the Oral History Center. I hope you enjoy our conversation. We're here to talk about a play, The Women of Tyringham, that's based on 32 oral history interviews that you conducted, right, Anne?
Yes.
And Anne lives in Tyringham, has directed community-based theater before, but this is her first play based on oral history. So, Anne, you've been working on this project for a while.
Yes.
A couple of years, more than a couple of years.
Thank you, COVID, yes. Extended.
Yes, because the production of the play was delayed for a year,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
We want to talk about your process, but first, I'd like to back up a little bit. I want to talk about the story and the process, but first, let's back up, and I want to hear what is community-based theater.
Community-based theater is, I would define it as curating a community and engaging the community in a very slow trust-building process. It took me, the first project I did, Our Town, back in 2017, took about a year for folks to kind of come around and trust me, and because theater's, you're vulnerable if you're going on stage or you're doing something new for the first time. It's very risky. But when it works and people become engaged, it's kind of an incredible thing. And I'm already seeing it with this project. There are folks who did not participate in the first one who are now, when we did our opening circle, our first rehearsal, one woman said, yeah, I'm sorry I didn't do the first one, and now I want to do this one.
So Our Town was 4 years ago, and can you just tell us a little bit about that, and then we'll sort of compare it to how this one...
Sure.
So how did that one work?
The genesis of that one was in Memorial Day in Tyringham Cemetery every year. Everybody gathers in the cemetery, and the veterans and the summer folks and the local folks. And I was just looking around one day and went, oh my gosh, Our Town just went whoo in my brain. I went, I have to do it with these people. And I'd never produced, directed, nothing before, but I went, you know, I can do this.
Just backing up, you do have a training in this, I remember.
After my kids started leaving the house and going off to school, I got a master's in theater education, mm-hmm. which taught me. That was a life changer. So that gave me the tools and the courage to do it. Then the genesis for Women of Tyringham was sitting in the schoolhouse where I'm a member of the Historical Commission, and there are these stacks of tapes. And I went, ooh, what are those? And they went, oh, these are interviews from the 70s till about 2000-something. And so I said, I better digitize them. And as I'm digitizing them, I realized out of 60 tapes, there are only 5 or 6 women who had been interviewed. So I went, ugh, no, we have to do something about that. And after Our Town, everyone was psyched. We did a play. Let's do another one. And there's this little town in Italy, Montecchiello, who every single August they write their own play. And they've been doing this since the 60s. So one of their first plays was about World War II because of... And I showed that film at the church, and I said, this is someday we're going to do something just like this. So finally, this project kind of started. So it is the voices of these women in town. So it kind of... We're doing something very similar but very different.
So you started the project by actually going out and interviewing 32 people, is that right?
Yep. I invited probably close to 40 ladies, and there were parameters. You had to either have been born and raised here and or you know, married into town, and or if you've been here since the 60s or the 70s. I consider that being here a long time, right?
And then there's also like another community that is here for a long, long time, but maybe just in the summer.
right?
Then there are the weekenders, and then there are the old family weekenders, many of whom have now moved here full-time, like Ann Palmer, for instance. She died last year, and she was over 100, and her family came when she was just a little kid. And then she ended up moving here, and her stories are in the play as well. So out of those, there were a handful of people who didn't want to be interviewed for, you know, whatever reason, and that's totally fine. And then those who wanted to be, it was an interesting cross-section of women. Really, really interesting. Some of them would tell real stories, in quotes. Others would just kind of touch the surface and not want to talk too deeply. And I'd say out of all of those, the 32, I would say maybe we ended up transcribing 15 of them, figuring those would have some meat to them to put a piece together. That's not to say those interviews were irrelevant or boring. It's just that there wasn't fodder for drama in there.
And we will, and we'll archive them eventually.
Will
archive them.
Yeah. That's my winter project, to put it with all the guys talking about snow removal and storms and things.
So now let's talk about the process. So you interview these people. When did you decide to, you knew you were going to do a play when you did these oral histories, or no?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
Good question.
Yeah.
Thinking back, it was a while ago. Yes.
Yeah.
I did.
Yep. It makes sense because you had just done one, right?
Yep.
And so what did you do? You have 32 interviews. You have a 15 or so transcriptions.
Right.
So that's a lot of pages of talk.
Yep.
How did you deal with the 15 transcripts? What did you do?
Then Rachel Urquhart and I sat, and we each read through everything. We had two copies of all of these transcripts, and we would just circle if it was a line, if it was a character description, if it was a full-fledged story, and we just circled things, and then we would read them to each other because you have to hear them out loud. Because this is verbatim theater, which is literally, except for a few altered words, and we had to change some of them. My father, we couldn't have another father in here, so we changed it to brother or something. But it's literally the ahs and the ums are in that. So we would sit and read every single word on all those transcriptions, circled, and started making piles. This entire living room was the farming pile, this was the character pile, this was the funny line pile, that was the mother pile, that was the father pile, that was the farming pile, that was the death pile, that was the community pile. So we made all these piles.
Piles of what? So had you cut them up?
Those were our categories. Yeah,
okay,
we would
cut
them up. Okay, so
you cut the transcripts.
Yeah.
Okay, and took the little pieces out and put them in piles.
Yeah. So we spent hours in here every day for probably a month just piecing it together. So we had all of this stuff, and I had just gone to London to the British Library to do a workshop over there on how to take text to script, and it was just a one-day workshop, which was kind of a fun reason to just have to go off and go to London, for a one-day workshop. And at the middle of it, the guy goes, "All right, you're all going to take here. I'm going to hand out these transcripts, and you have a half an hour to write a scene based on this stuff." With no computer, this is handwritten, no laptops. And then we all read each other's scenes. So that was just a Fisher cut bait moment. So Rachel and I had been, moving these piles around, and I went, "Okay, stop. We have to stop making piles. We now have to start writing. You and I are going to go in that kitchen, and we're going to sit down. Here's a piece for you, and here's a piece for me. And we have a half an hour, and we're just going to start writing a scene." And both of those scenes are still in the play. So
interesting.
Yeah, it was really fascinating. But having done it once, I knew that's the only way we were going to get this up and into a script.
So at some point, you knew it was a script. It was sort of a thing.
It was a thing. There were and it we it ended up being the categories, mothers and relationships with mothers and fathers and marriage and going to school. And so the categories started to emerge and we started to blend them. And they're still pretty much, we refer to them as those categories still, the scenes. Mm-hmm. Typically a script will have an arc of a character. They'll have changed from the beginning to the end. These characters don't change because this is, they've existed, they've lived their lives. We're just hearing them talk about their arc. They're not changing. They've already done it.
Maybe for the listener, the change will be there, but not...
Interesting enough, with the very first reading we did before we couldn't be in person was in this room with... We had about 30, 40 people in here. Be careful what you ask for. I said, let's, you know, fill out a comment card. What are your thoughts about this? And then I get the feedback. I'm like, I hate this ripping up. That's not true. Very defensive. But one of the points was there's no story arc. There's no character arc, which showed me that we had a lot more work to do, not to create that arc, but that it wasn't yet.
Yeah, so it's like a collage in a way.
Yeah. That's
but it does go it. From here to there.
Yep.
So you sort of, you look at it from here to here, sort of left to right or whatever.
Because the conclusion is, I think, 5 or 6 women come out and just say, and these are all, don't forget, from interviews.
Right.
People said these words. We did not write these words.
Right, and the women who are saying them are also women of Tieringham, but they're not saying their own words.
No. Yeah. I made a casting choice and made sure they were not saying their own words.
Can you talk about that? Why?
Well, I worked with kids a few years ago, and it's just something you don't do. I guess I learned that at school, and it kind of makes sense. It's better to have someone else say your thoughts, I think, instead of you.
It does make sense to you. Someone sort of becomes your words, and you're right there. Seeing it happen. How interesting.
When we do the readings, we did the readings and many of the ladies I interviewed came for the very first reading. They did not come for to sign up to be in it, but I spent my entire time watching them hear their words and their stories. No one, and everyone's trying to guess whose is whose, and some of the ladies who knew each other were like, that's mine, that's yours. It was very funny. But it was all very kind and you know, because there's some not great moments in here.
Yeah, I imagine. We can't talk about all the stories. That'll have to come later, but you have to go see them. Talk about the setting. How did you pick the...
So originally we were going to do it in the 1891 barn down the street, the old Hale farm. And then COVID happened, and because I was so ecstatic to be indoors finally... and not have to worry about weather. Well, so it became apparent that we were not going to be able to do it indoors I'd have to wait till I was, you know, on my deathbed before the world opened up completely to feel comfortable doing that. So I went back and I had spotted different places to do it. And the third act of our town took place in the field next to the cemetery behind the Union Church, up by the monument side. Not in the monuments, but next to it. But there's this other corner with a beautiful, perfectly round tree that you can see the schoolhouse, you can see the hills, you can see a farm up here, and then you can see the cobble, which is kind of everybody's, that's the center of town, is that cobble right there. And I went, we can do it here. I've done it outdoors before, we can do this again. So I've made a thrust stage, thanks to Corinna May, who said for, you know, non-actors to be able to hear them. They're not used to throwing their voices. And so a thrust stage is kind of a three, if you go to Shaking Coat, when they typically have a thrust, three sides, the audience is around three sides. So I've spray painted the grass with paint so you can see where the stage is and the actors. And then the actors are going to be lined up along the fence. So there's a beautiful split rail fence, which is just, it's just iconic of the town and the farm and the agricultural history here. And we have benches. The actors are going to be seated. You can watch them while the scenes are going on. There's some monologues, 20 characters. So there's a lot of actors crisscrossing and they're all going to be seated just watching what's going on. So it was,
I spoke with you a while ago about this while you were still processing it, and you were interested in how many people had favorite places. What were some of the favorite places? Can you remember?
Yeah. There was Baldy, which is no longer Baldy. And I went to the dump yesterday with my stage manager, Francis, to talk on Wednesday to talk with Tom and Hoppy and to go ask them, where's Baldy?
And how do you spell that?
B-A-L-D-Y.
Okay.
So it was a hill full of blueberry bushes, and everyone picked blueberries up there. Everybody remembers, but no one can find it anymore because it's completely overgrown with trees. So no one knows where Baldy is anymore because it's not bald. It's just another tree hill. So
that raises another question. How do the men feel about this being left out of your play?
Well, there are three male actors, mm-hmm. Who play multiple roles. Some of them are not so nice parts. Some of them are nice parts. Tom Fennelly was wanted to be back in this play again. He was in Our Town, and he's such a smart man and such a kind human as well. And so he wanted to be in it. So we had to make some parts for it. So, but these guys, the three, Larry, Kim, and Tom, are just all in and just totally fine with it, totally get it. Kim the other day, Kim is a guy. We did the end of a scene, and we were all weeping, and he was weeping too, because he's a cancer survivor, and it's about women's husband. She was married 20 years, and then he died of cancer. And so there's this, it's a monologue, but we've created a scene for that. And Kim watching this, and he's in it too. He's in the scene, but it was just heavy duty. Because they took a cart. They had two Belgian horses and a big hay wagon, and they went down Main Road all the way down to Ashentully with her husband in a lawn chair because he was so ill. But on the back of this wooden wagon thing, pulled by these two huge horses, and then his brother was dying of cancer, but not quite at that stage that her husband was. And she just describes, you know, the brother was able to take them up to the end of the road, but she had to bring them back because he was so tired. So it was just this, what an image of just going up Main Road with this guy in a lawn chair. And it was just such a picture. So
yeah.
I hope it works.
Yeah, I would imagine you try to make pictures. Is that right?
It's kind of, they're tableau. It's a tableau kind of thing. I mean, it's movement. There's not, you don't freeze.
Right.
There's one freeze one, but it's a gag freeze. But it's a picture because this is a big directing project for me, something I've not done at this level at all. And my mentor, Courtney O'Connor, who directed Our Town, I asked her, so do you pre-block? Blocking meaning telling where the actors move on the stage. And she goes, no, I just have a picture in my head of what I want it to look like. And I went, okay. So that's been very helpful because a lot of these are just images, especially when you're outdoors. You have this environment. You don't have to worry about lights. You don't have to worry about stages and nothing. It's just so pure. It doesn't get simpler than that, other than rain and lightning.
Thunder and lightning.
Knock on wood.
So I'm sitting here thinking, Anne, are you a woman of Tearingham?
No,
you're not.
I'm not.
How long have you lived here?
We got the house in 99. We lived overseas on and off, mm-hmm. So it was a really great place to have a home base. Mm-hmm. And then once my third daughter graduated on a Sunday, and Monday the moving van came, and we came out here full time.
Mm.
And I don't know what year
mm-hmm.
that was.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a big question. I mean, since the world is always moving, you know, how do we identify with, what place do we identify with, you know? Where is home? And
where is home? This is my home. I've never been in a place. When we first bought that house, it was the first house we looked at. And I went, yep, this is it. And we saw a bunch of others, but the town, there was something, and you ask anyone who lives in Tyringham, and they will all have a similar.
It's so interesting that you've devoted so much energy to these projects and to projects, other projects that we're not even talking about. That I wonder, at what point does a person feel sort of qualified, you know?
Depends upon who you ask.
Yes.
If you ask Hoppy, you'll never qualify. If you ask Maggie Curtin, nope. Probably
yeah, but
not.
You have to. I would say you have to ask yourself.
Yeah,
because there, everyone's going to have a different opinion.
That's right.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. It's very
well. What's funny is everybody's house has a name. We live in Mrs. Reber's house.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But for those people who never knew Mrs. Reber, we right. bought it from her family.
Right.
That's probably the Gallo house now.
Right. Right.
So maybe that's when you start to become...
When your house gets named.
Yeah.
Well, it's an interesting concept anyway. Tell me the dates, Anne.
Yeah. July 24, 25, 31, and August 1 at 11 a.m. in the field next to the Tyringham Cemetery. We'll do it in misty rain, but we won't do it in downpour rain.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Please find more about our work and the work of our partners, like the Ubu Theater, at theoralhistorycenter.org. Thank you for listening.